Welcome to Ask the Vet. My name's Beth, and I'm here today with Dr. Chuck Maker from Alpine Animal Hospital. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, Beth.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. You enjoying this lovely snowy weather?
It's nice to see winter return.
I'm glad someone thinks that. I just want to remind the listeners that this is a call-in show, so as we're talking today, I know we're going to be talking a lot about horses, but Dr. Maker is a vet, so feel free to try to stump him with any of your questions.
About horses.
The call-in, the number here is 963-2976, so feel free to call in. So you are primarily an equine vet, Dr. Maker, and... do you work on any other large animals?
I thought we weren't going to go into that.
Goats, but I'm here to
sheep,
keep it interesting.
Llamas.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Cows?
Cows.
Okay, good, good, good.
For the remaining ranchers in the valley.
There are some, and they appreciate you. All right. So I think a good topic for today would be some of the most common issues you see with horses. And you know, what the average horse owner might be able to do while they're waiting for their veterinarian to show up. It's, you know, there's lots of problems you can see with a horse. I think one of the most concerning maybe eye problems.
Yeah, I mean, I recently put together an outline of the kind of the foremost common things we see this time of year. You know, this is the kind of in-between year.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time of the year when horses are not necessarily being shown as frequently, so we kind of have, in some respects, put them away, hopefully keeping them exercised, and this is the time of the year where we see more emergency medicine kinds of issues, not the, let's say, the more sport horse kind of athletic maintenance issues that are more common spring through fall. So we see colics.
Right. You feel like colic's more of a winter problem?
Well, certain types of colic, certainly. I mean, the kind of colic we see in the winter is typically associated with kind of a sedentary lifestyle, hanging around the feed pile, not drinking enough water, not exercising.
Mm-hmm.
And horses are herbivores that require lots of water to properly digest their food. So we see a lot of impaction or constipation types of issues be more common this time of year.
Mm-hmm. And as far as something that the owner can do when they start to see some signs of colic, do you have any recommendations?
Well, it's the age-old thing is to keep them walking until the veterinarian comes. There are some colic pressure points and things that have some efficacy, but you know, defining a diagnosis accurately generally defines a more effective treatment. So I would say keeping them walking is...
Keeping them walking. And would you immediately pull their feed? I mean, a lot of those horses, I'm assuming, aren't eating.
I always liken it to don't put more water in the sink until this, if it's plugged, until you fix the... until it's not plugged, so...
That's a very good analogy.
Water is always good, but... giving them more feed, particularly more grain. If, you know, they were colicking this morning and they weren't eating and are stretching out and, you know, getting it tended to earlier is usually better.
Okay. Okay. That's good. Because I don't know. I feel like I've had horses colic in the winter more than the summer, but that just...
Well, we usually see them in the summer and it's like, you know, it's similar, but, you know, it's dehydration. It's like they're being actively... competed or trained more intensively and with our arid environment the sweat isn't as evident, so horses can become dehydrated and electrolyte deprived. I mean, we tell people to make sure they give horses electrolytes or, you know, trace mineral and brown salt blocks in the winter. You know, theoretically, if you salt your french fries more, you drink more water. Horses, as a result of the temperature, will not feel the urge to drink as much this time of year. So if we increase their electrolyte intake, their natural instinct will be to drink more water.
I think I put salt on everything, but I don't know. It's just me.
That's bad medical choices. Beth.
Yeah, well, hopefully my doctor doesn't call into this show. So
we only have a half an hour.
Thank God for that. It seems like, you know, another common problem this time of year is lacerations, puncture wounds. You know, I know fences go down, the snow comes, horses kind of, you know, walk through everything. And when a person finds their horse with some type of wound, what recommendations do you have? Obviously calling the veterinarian, but we all know that you can't get there within 2 seconds. It's too bad for that.
Well, I mean, this time of year, unfortunately, when we, a lot of those, there's a lot of important structures down low on the horse's anatomy, lots of joints, lots of tendons. And this time of year, we can see kind of a devitalization of the tissue as a result of the cold. We see a lot of what are called degloving injuries.
And what does that look like?
You know, where the skin is kind of draped down mm-hmm. away from the wound, and, you know, tissue freezes, you know, hypothermia, et cetera. So mm-hmm. I think getting those wounds tended to, making sure you're checking on your horse morning and night, making sure the fences look good, making sure there's, you know, no issues, because those types of cold related emergencies can really complicate wound healing if they're not tended to quickly.
So if I find one of my horses bleeding, is there anything I can do to help the cause, but while you're on your way?
We usually try and empower people to be equipped with a certain emergency kit,
mm-hmm.
you know, some type of padding and some form of an anti-stick or non-stick pad,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a nice clean wrap mm-hmm. with a sheet cotton and a polo wrap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as most wounds are down low on the leg.
Right.
Just to keep things covered and to keep things warm, if mm-hmm. you will, and mm-hmm. from becoming further contaminated until we can get there and assess the situation.
Guess you're not going to be doing a lot of cold hosing this time of year.
No. I mean, if there's a clean wound, I think we're better off getting primary wound closure with sterile fluids and...
Mm-hmm.
If there's a grossly contaminated wound that's 3 or 4 days old, you're probably not going to make it any dirtier with clean water out of the spigot that you would
right.
drink.
Okay.
But I think, we try and do things smartly. And I think acting rapidly and identifying those things and checking on your horses this time of year twice a day,
mm-hmm.
Give us a call as soon as you find a problem and we'll take care of it.
Yeah, no, that's good. I think it just always helps, obviously, for the horse owner to just have something to do while they're waiting for the veterinarian. So those are good tips for lacerations and puncture type wounds. I know punctures can sometimes not look like a big deal, but become or actually be quite a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it's like an iceberg. There's only 10% on the surface you can see. I mean, punctures are problematic because most things in a horse's environment are not clean.
Mm-hmm.
And they can inoculate underneath the skin bad organisms in the horse's environment. In the particular instance, it would be, you know, the tetanus
mm-hmm.
and the coliform type bacteria that mm-hmm. are ubiquitous in their environments. So... You know, we try and look at things preventatively, but certainly, yeah, I mean, colic, lacerations, eye problems, puncture wounds, those are the more common 911 visits we see this time of year for those horses out in the pasture waiting for green grass,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was going to arrive soon until a few days ago, and now it seems we're back in the winter mode.
Yeah, it appears we're still in the mountains of Colorado.
Right.
I was unsure for a while.
Right, we all were.
It looks like we're back there.
Right.
I was hoping for palm trees, but I guess that's not happening. So those are some good pointers. Touch on some wellness type situations with horses. I mean, we're talking about emergencies. We're talking about all the disastrous type things that can happen. What is it that horse owners should be doing to keep their horses healthy to try to prevent... You know,
yeah.
sickness, aging.
You know, if healthy horses equals healthy or happy owners, I think, imagine 5 circles that intersect in the middle. You've got, you know, you've got internal parasite control. You've got dentistry, dental care. You've
mm-hmm.
got lameness and general wellness care. You've got nutritional, you are what you eat. And more so than ever. We have a better understanding now of what good forage is and how to balance your horse's needs with the different types of forage that are available. So trying to look at it as a whole body wellness rather than, you know, March is typically the month where we get organized and we get nicer weather and we start, you know, vaccinating horses for the core vaccines and the risk-based diseases. But looking back and kind of taking a step back and looking at it as kind of a whole body wellness and looking at whether it be dog, cat, horse, and really assessing all their needs rather than just their biologic vaccine needs. There's controversy and there's variation as to what horses should be vaccinated for based on their exposure levels and risks. But that's the point, is that identifying each individual animal as to what they need with respect to those nutrition, dentistry, vaccine. And we know so much more now about horses and as they age, and the field of gerontology in horses is ever expanding. And
what do you consider a senior horse? What's the age range there?
Well, when I was a kid, it was anything over 15. And now we see 13, 14, 15-year-old horses that are in their prime, dressage horses that are just doing fabulously. I would say, you know, nutritionally, there is a change that occurs 18, 19 years of age where older horses' small intestines digest protein and absorb electrolytes differently than younger horses. So they're, depending on genetics and depending on what the horse does and how many calories it needs on a daily basis, there's some nutritional considerations that start to come into play in their late teens. But an older horse nowadays, probably by textbook, is probably anything over 18. But we see horses that are really doing really well in their mid-20s. And some late 20s.
So when you're starting to think about wanting to do some more sort of preventative wellness type care for a horse, at what age would you start recommending like some senior screening blood work and things like that?
Well, I mean, I think it's kind of like comparing a teenager, a 40-year-old adult, and a 65-year-old adult, probably. There are kind of certain subsets of the horse population that we see certain things more commonly in. So we typically design things according to risk or relative odds of having the development of a problem. So we try and design packages, if you will, to, again, ensure this whole body healthy horse relative to their age. I mean, what we're going to be looking for and be concerned with in a three-year-old that's, you know, come up from Texas and is now in training and so forth, is going to be vastly different from a horse living on 5 acres that's lived here all its life, that's 28. So it's very, gets very specific.
So you recommend annual, you know, blood work and screening for every horse, do you think? Or again, it's risk?
I think it starts with an awareness of what normal is. And I think it's really easy to make a parallel between, you know, ever since the Affordable Care Act, you know, you know where, okay, a physical exam is included in your annual. I mean, it seems, you know, you listen to the media and emergency room visits are very expensive, and emergency room visits for veterinary care are usually more expensive than general proactive care.
Absolutely.
So I think identifying certain, you know, the health status, assessing the health status annually is a good idea with all animals.
Right.
Whether they be dogs, cats, or horses, and considering some age-related screenings, you know, one horse's needs in a pasture with 20 others, as far as internal parasites, are going to be potentially completely different than a horse that's in 5 acres by himself that's never had horses on it. So kind of packaging things according to an animal's examination findings and their age and the forage that's available for, you know, hay quality is generally very good, and But
so are you saying this is not black and white?
It isn't. There's actually 256 shades of gray.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Yes.
That's new. I learned something new today.
Well.
That might have been the only
there's a
new
first
thing.
Time.
Okay. Well, it's good. I like learning new things. You said annual wellness, which is great. Do you feel like horses need biannual like teeth checks and things like that? I feel like.
Well, I mean, we're trained in. I mean, I'm trained anyway. I go to a local dentist.
I'm
and
not
going
to discuss.
I've
this
been going
personally
every 6 months since I was a kid, right? And I think we have good access to good dental care.
Right.
Horses eat all sorts of things that we don't. They have a completely different dental structure than we do, and their body relies on being able to grind forage into a small enough piece so that the bacteria can do the digestion and liberate, you know, the feedstuffs into digestible components. That said, there are those horses that require, because of conformational issues and geriatric periodontal health issues, twice yearly dental care. The vast majority, I think, if people are proactive and start when they're young and they have decent conformation, annually just assessing.
Right.
Just like, you know, the exam word, a dental exam, a nutritional consultation or exam. I mean, kind of making sure that your animal, dog, cat, or horse, is healthy. And, you know, dogs and cats don't eat the same things horses do.
That's correct.
And they have different dental needs.
Right.
But I think identifying those and tracking those, it's much easier to proactively care for their teeth to maintain comfort and longevity in their teeth than wait till they're 25 and they have no teeth and they need to live on hay cubes.
Right, right. No, that's a good point. That's a good point. So proactive, obviously, is the key to a lot of these things for wellness. I kind of wanted to touch on hooves.
Hooves.
Any specific care for horses in the winter in regards to their hoof care? Anything specific you can come up with?
Yeah, I mean, regionally and somewhat occupationally, what horses, depending on what horses do, there's different mindsets. But horses do a lot better getting hoof care throughout the year. I mean, we do see some horses that are trailered, you know, out of the valley to live where they can browse. And, you know, their feet, while their feet do grow slower in the winter. They grow slower in the winter. There's, you know, they're eating less. They're expending more energy to stay warm. I think, you know, if it's like rotating your car's tires, they need regular care to maintain balance, particularly when you consider there's kind of a variation in a horse's conformation. A horse's feet grow according to how they're conformed and to what they're walking over and to what they're eating. So a farrier, they are trained in maintaining that balance despite the variation in a horse's environment and diet and conformation and so forth. So yeah, I mean, they it draws to the same conclusion as a dental or an annual exam. It's making sure your horse's feet are cared for in the winter months. A lot of times we see problems with horses in the winter where they, if we get the right humidity, it's like getting the wrong wax on your skis. They get big ice balls in their feet.
Yes, I've seen that a lot, actually, where they're standing on their toes because of it.
And we see some soreness and some definite podiatry issues from that. So, you know, it's you can't just go get them out of the pasture in April and expect they'd be in good shape if you don't take care of them all winter.
Do we see, or do you, excuse me, do you see a lot of issues here? We get a mud season. We get a lot of wet environments. You get a lot of issues, thrush, things like that, with horse feet here in the springtime? And if
seasonally.
So, you do? Okay.
Yeah, it's if you're wearing muck boots, it's horse thrush, you know, sole issue problems. I mean, all this lovely snow in the bottom of the valley just means mud.
Right.
And we do see those issues.
Is there anything that the horse owner can do to try to make, to prevent? I mean, obviously get them in a dry area, but I mean, you know, you, if you only have so much land and it's all mucky,
keeping them in a well-drained paddock and picking up after them through the winter, as hard as it is, will ensure for more drainage, and it can be a challenge. I don't deny that.
Yeah, I mean, it's rough, I know, when everything melts. And on that same regard, I feel like we don't get a ton of heavy rains, but I mean, what about the rain rot issue? Do we see much in the way of rain rot here?
We've actually seen quite a bit of skin disease in the last few weeks with this moisture weather. Horses have longer hair coats.
Just trapping
things. They're just starting to get to where the photoperiod's going to get to where they start to shed. And that longer hair coat with a little moisture traps more bacteria down on the skin. And we see a lot of ringworm. We've seen quite a few cases of that in the last couple of weeks.
Interesting.
And then rain rot, a bacterial skin infection. So keeping your horse well-groomed and as clean as possible, currying out their coat so that air can get down to the skin will keep them healthier.
Right, because I feel like that mud this time of, you know, the springtime builds up on their along their back line, and then the moisture and just it just all kind of cakes on
pestilence.
There. It is pestilence. Thank you. Thank you. Any other things you'd like to touch on today, Dr. Maker, regarding, you know, either horse
remember
wellness?
When it's cold like this, you know, it's below 45 degrees. Horses need about a percent of additional calories for every degree below 45. So that horse that maintains a 985-pound body weight in June on, you know, 18 pounds or 17 pounds of hay needs correspondingly additional hay, not to gain weight, but just to keep warm.
Right.
That hay is fermented in their hindgut, and if you only feed them the same amount as they feed in June, they will lose weight because they're burning calories just to stay warm.
Right. I don't know if I dare touch on. I feel like it's
controversial. You're going to have to talk about blanketing.
I was, actually. Oh. I was going to touch on controversially blanketing. Any pointers?
I think blanketing does have its place because there are some healthy geriatric horses that don't have the dentition to properly chew the amount of food they physically need to eat anymore. And if the amount of feed that they need on a daily basis is such that they can't consume it, you can relatively affect that by keeping them warmer with a blanket. I think the key is making sure that you take it off when it gets warmer during the day so they're not sweating in it, because then they get skin infections and so forth.
How does one know that their horse is in need of a blanket? I mean, you're looking at a very thin horse, or... What's the indicators?
That's we're going to see that next month when horses start to shed and people start to see their horses have shed out and maybe they've lost some weight. I think assessing your horse on a twice monthly basis with a weight tape, making sure they're staying where they need to stay. I mean, I think that's the key, is continually assessing them instead of being reactive, you know, 2-3
proactive
months down the line.
Right. Proactive.
Right.
That's good. I think that's a really good tip, because a lot of people are, I think, unsure when to blanket their horse, how much to feed. The winter with all the fluffy hair coats can be confusing.
Right.
Thank you so much, Dr. Maker. That's very informative.
Thank you for all our callers.
Yes, thank you to all our listeners and our callers.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Ask the Vet here on KD&K.